Hello everyone and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at a number of topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I am Rod Jones, content manager at the Institute, and in this podcast we will be looking at news up to the 24th of February 2020. Joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute. Hello Kate.
Hello Rod.
Our first story, Kate, looks at leavism, defined by Professor Gary Cooper as workers booking holiday time only to spend it focusing largely on work-related tasks they haven't been able to cover in office hours. In a recent article at The Telegraph, Professor Cooper frames leavism as the new presenteeism, citing research from his team at Manchester Business School estimating that, at some point, up to half of UK workers have claimed to be on leave when in fact they have been using that time to catch up on work. In addition, Professor Cooper cites CIPD research of 2018, stating that more than a third of UK staff have used some of their annual leave to provide themselves with time off when they are sick to ensure they don't use too many actual sick days, thereby averting the risk of having a poor track record on illness. Professor Cooper notes, "We are in an era where people are much more afraid of losing their jobs than in the past," he said. "Companies have been operating in a low-growth environment for the past decade, which has meant more focus on profitability, including labour costs. People want to be perceived as being on top of their work and job, and the way to do that is to cover all the bases and use their leave for work or sickness." Kate, what should leaders do to tackle this malaise?
I think Carrie Cooper's absolutely right. We've been encouraging people to work smarter, not harder. We've been exhorting people to do more with less and reporting, no doubt, on improved productivity and compelling arguments for that sort of rhetoric. And all we're doing, in effect, here is pushing the problem somewhere else. So we're still able to show brilliant attendance records. We're still able to show we're keeping on top of our work. But what we're doing is using our leave in order to maintain what are obviously false metrics. So the real question here is how long is this sustainable for? How can we keep asking people to erode their conditions of employment by having to work, by having to use the days for sickness? And what are we doing in terms of contributing to burnout? You have holidays, you have a manageable workload so that you can enjoy and contribute to a job well done. This does not paint a picture of that.
Thank you very much, Kate. Well, our next story asks, how would you feel if your expenses were declined because your meal contained meat? A recent BBC Radio 5 live report by Felicity Hannah looks at the situation at property developers Igloo Regeneration, where all corporate entertaining, workshop catering and even staff expenses must now be vegetarian if staff wish to be reimbursed. Development surveyor Kate Morfleet, 28, is head of the firm's values team and persuaded staff to go vegetarian last year to reduce its environmental impact. The idea was put to an internal vote and passed with a few dissenters. "We realised we needed the whole company to come on board, it just couldn't be imposed," she says. "We had some justifications as to why it was a good idea, mostly environmental. There were some reservations from staff, but most of those were based on them being unsure of the environmental impact." The property developer is not the first company to bring in a rule about meat products. In 2018, shared office provider WeWork told staff it would no longer reimburse them for meals containing poultry, pork and red meat. Kate, is this an example of organisations going too far and imposing their values on what are essentially personal and private choices and decisions?
I suppose it depends whether you think climate change is a personal and private choice and decision. The evidence that the one single thing that individuals can do to contribute to having an impact on climate change is to eat less meat. And none of these decisions, it's like single-use plastics. It's like a lot of practices that organisations do that are environmentally unfriendly. They have to challenge themselves, and the response is going to be uncomfortable for a lot of people. It'd be very difficult to argue that this isn't a positive thing in terms of nobody's going to do without food, everyone's still going to be nourished, and maybe collectively we are having an impact. And how else can companies influence other than really as consumers, as people who buy products and services and have to be ethical throughout their supply chains? And I can understand really great here that Kate Marfleet saw the importance of getting buy-in. I suppose my question is, what's the argument against it? We're not trying to make people be vegan or even vegetarians. All we're saying is, just like some companies will not reimburse alcohol because they're taking a moral position on the consumption of alcohol, that's what they're doing. And I suppose ultimately, if you really don't like it, well, you need to work somewhere else.
Thank you, Kate. Our next story is a recent report by BBC Business that Barclays says it has scrapped a system that tracked the time employees spent at their desks and sent warnings to those spending too long on breaks. The bank faced a staff backlash shortly after introducing the system and said that axing the tracking system was a response to colleague feedback. In a statement, the bank said, "We always intended to listen to colleague feedback as part of this limited pilot, which was intended to tackle issues such as individual overworking as well as raise general productivity. However, in addition to sparking unease within the bank, it attracted criticism from privacy campaigners and HR professionals." Edward Horton, head of research at the Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development, questioned whether it was ever appropriate to use what he described as a big brother approach to workplace monitoring. "Technologies like this may actually cause more harm than good," he said. "They can create mistrust or low levels of trust for employees. Employees can feel like they're being watched and not trusted to do their own work effectively." Kate, what does this story tell us about levels of trust in international banking?
I think what it really tells us immediately, that however well-intentioned Barclays was in terms of monitoring time that people were at their desks, whether they were taking sufficient breaks, you have to be so aware of how your actions might also be interpreted. And if the desired goal was, let's make everybody more active, more aware of how damaging it is to sit at a desk for a long period of time, should we not, a bit like the previous piece about consulting with people about reimbursement, meat products, should they not have said, what will make you do that? We all know how easy it is to get wearable technology that will report to us on our inactivity or activity. You can create groups with your colleagues, so there's an element of transparency about it, and it also, there's that great camaraderie it can build if you're in competition with another team. So intention brilliant, the actual execution of it very poor, and you have to be so careful about how people perceive your actions. And it doesn't really matter if your intentions were absolutely sound and for the best. If there's an opportunity for them to be perceived differently, find out before you implement these procedures.
Thank you, Kate. Our final story looks at a surprising new survey that found, despite employment regulations, more than half of employees admit to still judging applicants based on their appearance. The research, commissioned by Green King and reported in Study Finds, surveyed 1,000 hiring managers and bosses in the United Kingdom. Overall, 51% said they have knowingly discriminated against a potential employee because of the way they looked. Of those, 43% said they didn't hire the candidate because of their visible tattoos, and another 40% didn't hire candidates based on their clothes, while hair colour put off 30% of employers. Similarly, about half of respondents said they can't look beyond an interviewee's physical appearance, even if they appear to be more than capable of excelling in the job they are applying for. To that effect, 21% said they didn't hire a candidate because they had a disability. Employers should be open-minded and hire people based on potential rather than just appearance, said Green King HR Director Andrew Bush in a statement. Unfortunately, our research shows many businesses still judge a book by its cover, which means those talented, intelligent and experienced applicants could be overlooked because they don't conventionally look the part. Kate, would you agree with Andrew Bush that employees could be discriminating against potentially brilliant candidates?
We can't disagree with that, because they obviously are, because the number of tattoos somebody has or what their sartorial choice is really will not interfere with their intellect, their interpersonal skills. But where it might have an adverse impact is if they're given the job, knowing that the culture of the organisation is fairly conservative, expectations of their new colleagues would be low. So this is rather more than just a recruitment decision. What we have to really do here is challenge assumptions. What does somebody who work here and works here well look like? And I think that's what companies have to say. If they have a dress code, if there's a formality about their expectations, huge questions there about diversity and how narrow the stereotypes are. But that's a conversation that we have to challenge everywhere in the organisation, because of course this sort of bias is going to be played out in promotion decisions, in appraisals, in who gets chosen to go on company visits and customer pitches. There's going to be so many manifestations of this bias that it's not just enough to think it's a recruitment interview problem. No, it's a problem for all of us.
Thank you very much, Kate. Before we conclude this week's episode, is there anything you'd like to tell us that is going on at the Institute at the moment?
Yes, really pleased that we were invited to contribute to Radio 4's The Bottom Line. So I joined Evan Davis and other guests to have a discussion on the four-day week and how likely that is to happen.
Well, thank you, Kate. That does conclude this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again, Kate, for your insights on these stories.
Thank you, Rod.